are missed.
Well, Josh calls me and tells me all about it, and who all was there. And of course, I'm crazy about Owen West, and you know him.
Oh, yeah, he's the one that helped me get a hold of your son.
Oh.
West did.
Oh, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I see. Well, Owen is a mighty fine young man.
Yes, he is.
We thought that the club would fold up probably when Mr. Walker, who helped to organize it and was president for years and years and years, from about 1979 or 80 until he had to quit and died. And then Owen was made president. And everybody thought the club would die when Tillman died. I mean, left. But sure enough, it hadn't. It's just picked up, and they say it's just going great guns.
Yes.
And just ticked that.
I talked to his wife quite some time, trying to figure out how to get hold of your son and all this. But they are very, very fine people.
Oh, yes. They've been to see me since I've been here at this nursing home.
That's what she told me.
And I did appreciate it so much, so much. Olin worked most of the time out at Biddle in the yard office and all. But he did work up the freight office. Then he worked in our office, in the superintendent's office, for a while. But I did enjoy my work with the railroad company. And sometimes my husband, he was storekeeper for the railroad company there at Little Rock at Biddle. And so for years and years and years, I didn't drive a car. And he would say, I'd just talk and talk and talk, you know, about what went on at the office that day. And he'd say, "Honey, I wish you'd leave your job at the office." I said, "Well, I got to talk to somebody." So I did enjoy it. And I still miss it.
I've never thought Owen young, Mother.
No, he's not that young. He's like me.
Of course.
You know where he is today?
No.
In the deer woods.
Oh, in a deer camp?
Yes.
Oh.
Deer? Yeah, you know those guys in Saline County, how they do. They all want to go to the deer woods.
Yeah, it's practically a national holiday in Arkansas.
Really? I'm telling you, it's just something else.
Well. Olin's a mighty fine young man.
Ruth, just so we get the record straight, could you tell me again your full name and your age, please, ma'am?
My name is Ruth Williamson Armbrust.
And you are how old?
95.
Ordinarily, I don't ask ladies their age.
I don't mind.
But I think in this particular case, it's of significant interest to whoever might listen to this, that a person with your age is still ready to tell some more stories.
Well,
we're here to listen.
I will be 96 on the 5th day of November, 2 weeks from yesterday.
All right.
Well, she's got it all right.
Right. And maybe you could just reiterate a little bit how you happened to go to work for the Rock Island.
Well, as I say, I was going to what they call part-time school. Mm-hmm. When the war broke out, well, I knew that they'd probably get my husband and maybe my son. My son, 1941, was just 16 years old, not quite 17, and my husband was in his mid-30s, and so I thought, well, I better go back to school and refresh my stenographic course. So I did, and it was while I was down there, we were having a typing test that day, when the principal came up to me and said, "Would you like to go down and work for the Rock Island for 8 days? And I said, "Miss Bass, do you think I can?" And she said, "Well, if I hadn't thought you could, I wouldn't have asked you."
Okay, now this is in Little Rock?
Uh-huh, yeah. Down where one of the old federal buildings is now on 5th and Gaines.
Uh-huh.
And so.
Peabody Elementary
the old,
School.
Yeah, old Peabody Elementary School. And it was up on the third floor. So I went on down to the depot and worked for the chief dispatcher for the 8 days. And then superintendent's office had the vacancy for the division engineer secretary. And I went over there and worked in that capacity for 8 years. And the job as superintendent's secretary came open. And that was in the war. And I said, "Well, I don't know whether I can do that or not. It was an appointed job." And they said, "Well, all we want is somebody that can read their notes and transcribe them." So I said, "Okay, I'll try." And I stayed on that job from May of 1950 until they closed our office then in the January of 1965.
And that was closing the superintendent's office in Little Rock?
Sir?
That was closing the superintendent's office in Little Rock?
Yes, uh-huh, yep. And we moved downstairs then to the assistant superintendent's office, which a lot of people call the trainmaster's office. And I worked down there for about 3 years, and then they built the new building out at Biddle, and we moved out there then. And that's where I worked until I retired on November the 27th of 1970. Mm-hmm. I did appreciate Olin remembering me and all in.
See, he's not the only one. When I got to talk to these people, they're Rock Island people. I can't think of Al's last name.
That looked a little old.
Wagner.
Wagner. Do you remember him?
Who?
Alan Wagner?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I told him yesterday where you was, and you're probably getting a visit from him.
Oh, yes. I remember interviewing him when he was employed as a brakeman. A.O. Wagner.
That's right.
Yep.
Fine man.
Ah, you fine young man.
Has a fine wife.
Yes, I've met her, and she has taken pictures at some of our Rock Island Club meetings, picnics, and all. He was always A.O. to me.
That's the way they did it on the railroad. People were known by their initials, officially,
yeah,
that
well,
is.
Well, that's right, yeah. I handle efficiency test reports for the whole time I worked as superintendent secretary from 1950. And that way I learned a lot of the men and their initials.
Yes.
And all of them. And I know a lot of their names and all, and I didn't know the men until we moved out to Biddle. And our office was the new building out there, and our office was on the far east end of it, on the first floor, right at the foot of the stairs, and then the other part of it was the yardmaster, not the yardmaster's office either, but the freight office. And the switchman had their locker room down there, and he'd stop in there to see me and the schedule examiner. We'd have a cup of coffee and maybe a cookie or something, and before they'd go on upstairs to get the checks. And I learned a lot of the men then, especially in the switch switch service and train service, not so much the engine service because they were up at the roundhouse. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I did enjoy it so much.
I always thought the railroad was an interesting place just to be. Of course, when we were there, we worked there, but well, people were coming and going all the time, and trains were coming and going all the time. There were things going on all the time.
Yeah. Well, some of the clerks out there resented me working before 8 o'clock and sometimes during my lunch hour. But I thought, I don't mind that, because the men come in and want to tell me about their new girlfriend or their wife becoming pregnant or something, and I'm going to stop and listen to them.
Uh-huh.
And if I want to work through my lunch hour, a part of my lunch hour, and make up for that time, I'm going to do it. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And some of the clerks did resent it, but I couldn't help it. That's just the way it was done.
My mother still has her union card and pays her annual dues.
Oh, do you really?
Yes.
Have what, son?
Your union dues.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I still pay them every year.
That's neat. I like that. Well, do you have any favorite stories?
Oh, dear.
Or significant stories that you would like to lay upon us? Or funny ones? Or bad ones, if you want to tell. Let's face it, on the railroad and in the cop business. And I've been both places. There's good stories. There's funny stories. There's bad stories, there are horror stories. Some of the bad stories I've found 10 or 15 years after the fact, a lot of times have become funny stories when some of us, as long as we survived the event, whatever it was, 15 or 20 years later, we can sit around and tell a story, and then now we can laugh about it, but it wasn't funny when it happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was a little girl, I never did get to go out of Little Rock, except to Arkadelphia down here. One time I was down there for a conference with a young people's department of our church, and was down there for a week. And I thought, Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to marry a man whose name starts with A and work for the railroad company so I could travel. I loved it. And sure enough, I did both. And I never did have a second name, so I took my maiden name as my second name when, when I needed to. So that's how come we got the Williamson in there. But anyway, my husband and I have enjoyed our travels a great deal. I've been to Australia after my son and his wife moved out there and worked there for nearly 5 years. I went out there and I never dreamed I'd ever do that. And we've been up to Canada. We've been through every state in the United States except about five or six. And been up to Canada, up to Newfoundland. And, well, we just traveled a great deal.
Uh-huh.
And we did love every minute of it. And I have a lot of memories about our travels. And as I said, my husband was storekeeper for the railroad company here at Little Rock.
What was his first name?
Bernard.
Okay.
See, my son was Bernard Jr., so my husband's name is Bernard B.F. A lot of people, when you tell them what your name is and you try to pronounce it as plain as you can, arm brust, they'll turn around and say, Amherst.
Well, that's probably something else, too. I'm probably going to be that.
Oh, dear. Well.
What other stories would you like to tell us?
Well, right now, I tried last night to think of a few, but I...
What about some of the... Didn't we have a big head-on out east between here and Memphis one time?
Head-on what, darling?
A head-on collision. I remember Daddy had to go out there. Two steam locomotives, a train ran head-on out around Hazen. Or...
Oh, yeah. Gosh, that's been so long ago, I've even forgotten that.
Did he kill much of them? Did the engineer
I don't remember.
Survive it?
I don't remember now who the engineers were. It was quite a catastrophe, for sure. As I said, I didn't know, of course I knew a lot of the men in the engine service because of me handling the efficiency test reports. And I know on the West End, I had one conductor that one of the brakemen violated a rule. And I was familiar with a lot of the rules because I interviewed a lot of the men when they came to work for the company. And I'd say, now take the rule book and you do so and so and so and so and be sure you look at this one, or you look at that one, and all. And so when they violated a particular rule, of course the conductor was in charge of the train, and the brakeman violated this rule. And I had to take the investigation, which was just like court, if you well know.
Yep.
And so anyway, they disciplined the conductor along with the brakeman. And I thought, well, gosh, Mr. Smith wasn't responsible for that. He didn't do that, and I just cried and I cried and I cried. And Mr. Smith got hold of it. And do you know that he came to see me at the nursing home here since I've been here for the last 5 months? He and his wife came to see me, and he remembered that. And I said, I didn't know that you would remember that, but I cried so because I was so fond of Mr. Smith. He was such a nice person. But I didn't. I took a lot of those things to heart. And one day in the investigation, I had to take them, that's just like in court. And we had to type whatever the men were saying. If they said, I take them so-and-so, I had to type, I take them so-and-so, instead of putting, I took.
Yes.
And so anyway, one of them was always getting up and interrupting. And I knew him real well and was real fond of him. And I said, Jimmy, if you don't sit down, I'm gonna crack you over the head with this ruler. He laughed. He sat down. It was hard for me to keep up with them.
Certainly.
Because they were just going so fast and they were so interested in what they were saying and trying to defend their men, and then he was just going so fast and my fingers just wouldn't type that fast. And we were supposed to type every word as they said it.
Yes.
Jimmy, if you don't sit down, I'm going to crack you over the head with this ruler. And Jimmy sat down.
I've seen it in the courtroom where the judge had to do that. You didn't have a judge to help you, I guess.
Well, the superintendent was really the judge. You know, he was the one who was holding the investigation.
Uh-huh.
and would ask the questions and all. And so anyway, then when they gave me the retirement party, I had to cry. I'm such a sentimental old fool that when the trainmen's organization gave me a pin from the trainmen's organization and a sweet letter along with it, and I started to read it when they gave the pin to me, and I started crying, and I handed it over to Mr. Stiver, who was our road foreman of engines.
Bill
Stiver. And I said, "Mr. Stiver, you'll have to finish reading this for me. I can't do it." And he read it for me. And I was embarrassed to death, standing up there crying at my retirement party. But I did appreciate it so much of the trainmen's organization giving me a pen and writing me a sweet letter.
I would have cried too.
Did you know Mr. Stiver?
I knew him through my husband.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
You know, but I'm not really acquainted with him that much, but I knew him.
But he was an awfully nice person, and his wife too. Well.
Harold Rose,
eh? Mother, what about when you and I went from Little Rock back to Shawnee? What was it, in 27 with the big flood?
Yeah.
The water from the Arkansas River was up over the tracks out around Pinnacle.
Oh, yeah.
And washing the steps of the Pullman.
Yeah, all the way up. We were the very last train that got over in that flood of 1927, and water was up over the tracks till we got to Ola.
That was a lot of water.
That was a lot of water.
It really was. I wasn't here, but there was a lot of water, they said.
Yes, indeed there was.
The water came over the bridge, I think, Missouri Pacific Station,
didn't it? Well, it washed the Missouri Pacific Bridge out down there, but I know when we go by. When we'd go out here around Pinnacle, where it was so deep out there, we would go home in a Pullman car, of course, and I'd grab hold of the window, and I'd pull on that window, thinking that if we turned over, well, I'd at least be hanging on to something. Scared to death that the track would be washed out. And the section foreman would have to go ahead of the engine and see that everything was okay before the train could go on over.
I guess the section foreman would have had to walk it. Water was deep enough, he couldn't have.
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think he could have walked it.
Maybe that, or, I don't know, yeah. Rowboat.
Oh, my.
And what about Daddy's accident?
What about Daddy's what?
Accident. Wayne Bell trying to catch his.
Yes, that was a long time ago. In 1926, my husband was made living at Shawnee, Oklahoma then.
Uh-huh.
And that was where the division headquarters were, and district headquarters were, rather. And so anyway, he was made supply train storekeeper in September of 1926. And he had only been on the job about a little over a month. And coming down from Shawnee to Little Rock, he would come on freight train and carry supplies for the various stations and section men, instead of them having to, you know, ride in for them. So he'd pick up their old worn out tools and put them on their scrap car. And we got on down to I can't remember now where it was. Where was it, son? That he had the accident. Oh, he was trying to catch. He was at Boonville, Arkansas, and he was trying to catch his train. He had told him he was going to go eat some supper because that he had not had any lunch, and he was going to go eat him a bite of supper. And they apparently did not hear him, and they were going to take off without him. And so he ran to grab the train, and he grabbed hold of the handhold on the side of his car and missed his foot, and down he went, and it drug him, oh, I don't know how many feet, an awful long way, and split his head all open, and it really did do him in. And when I came on down on passenger the next morning, I saw him there at Boonville with his head all bound up, and everything scared me to death. But anyway, he got over it, but it was a long time getting over that head injury.
He for years. When it first happened, they didn't do much except just peel it back and pour iodine all over it. Then later, I remember even not too long before he died, Mother was still picking coal cinders out of his head.
That's right.
Come up like blackheads.
Uh-huh.
And you got a needle to dig them out.
That's right. It happened at Hartford, Arkansas, instead of Boonville. Boonville was a terminal. But it happened at Hartford, Arkansas. And that little country town up there where they didn't, you know much about taking care of emergencies and all.
Things were certainly different way back then.
Oh, my gracious, yes, I should say. But he had a lot of experiences on the supply train.
Curious about the supply train. Did they run just a special train for that purpose, cars that were used where he would offload supplies to the various places?
Well, it was he had a group of cars that they loaded up with supplies for the section foreman and the agents. And as I said, instead of them having to send their stuff in, he would pick up their old tools and supplies and give them new ones. And then he had the scrap car. He had a group of about 7 or 8 cars that he had with the new supplies and stuff on it, and then the old scrap car. And he had what they called a house car. And it had a bed in there and all fixed up like almost just like an apartment. Had the bed in there and the little stove and a little table and everything, and a little office and all. It was just real, real nice. I spent when he'd go to Fort Worth and over the weekend, a lot of times every third week he'd go to Fort Worth and Dallas, and I'd go down there and spend the weekend with him. And I'd sleep on the house car with him. And oh, it was so nice, you know, going down in the train yards at night with a flashlight. But anyway, we did enjoy that, and he enjoyed the work on the supply train. But they took him along with on the locals.
Uh-huh.
His 7 or 8 cars were attached to the locals, and of course they stopped at every station and picked up their old supplies and issued them new ones.
So his little part of the train would go from one terminal to the next, and he'd take care of everybody in between.
That's right. All up and down the railroad, from Shawnee, Oklahoma, to Memphis, Tennessee, and south to Alexandria, Louisiana, and south to Fort Worth, and out west to Waurika, Oklahoma. And
didn't he go to Tucumcari, New Mexico, too?
Huh?
Didn't he go to Tucumcari?
No. He may have gone out there a few times, but not very often. That was the end of the line.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful time, wonderful 28 years that I spent with the railroad company.
You got any favorite superintendents that you worked for?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
Who were they? And why were they favorites?
Well, they were just wonderful people. Mr. W. J. Pasta.
William J. Pasta?
That's right. Did you know him?
I knew who he was. I may have met him, but he was a higher official when I was on the railroad. I knew who Bill Pasta was.
And his wife's name was Lee. And do you know that I still hear from them every Christmas?
Was he an Arkansas guy, or did he come from somewhere else?
Oh, he came from somewhere else. I don't remember now just where Bill came from. Anyway, he was certainly wonderful to me. He was there, I guess, in our office for a little over 2 years, and that was longer than any superintendent stayed while I was there. Mm-hmm. Some of the others were Mr. Hardwick, C.H. Hardwick.
Okay, I didn't know him.
He was the first one that I went to work for in 1950, May of 1950.
No wonder I didn't know him. I was barely alive then.
Oh, and then there was J.H. Lloyd. He was an awfully nice person.
I think I've heard that name.
I was very fond of him. He was superintendent there at Little Rock for quite a long time. Then he worked himself on up to an official job out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. The last superintendent that I worked for there as superintendent was Mr. O.R. Thurston. T-H-U-R-S-T-O-N.
Oliver Thurston?
Oliver Thurston. Did you know him?
Yeah. I think he was the superintendent in El Reno when I worked in Dallas.
Yeah, he was superintendent in El Reno for a while, I know.
O-R-T.
I don't remember just when.
Yeah, I knew who he was, and I'm sure I worked for him.
Yeah. Well, and another one that was such a nice person was Mr. George Voss, V-O-S-S.
I met Mr. Voss. He was a nice man.
Yes, he was very, very nice.
And I think he spent most of his time on the north end of the railroad, yes, to my knowledge. In fact, I think he came from up there somewhere.
I think he did, too. And then another one that we had who was awfully nice was Mr. Lloyd. He was very, very nice. And Mr. Lloyd was here twice. And Mr. R.W. Anderson. He worked himself up to a nice job with the company. And when he finally retired, well, he moved out to California to be with their only child, a daughter. And he didn't live too long after he retired, but his wife and I corresponded for a long, long time, even after he died, and so she's been gone now for several years. But I feel so good that some of them even think of me, to even write to me at Christmas time.
Yes. It was my experience on the railroad. I met some awfully nice people.
Oh, man. We had some wonderful ones who worked in our office.
So you never worked for railroad police or anything?
No. No. Before I worked in the FBI, I see a cop, and all those are the kind of people who cross over to the other side of the street. If you don't get close to them, they won't drop a hook on you.
Yeah.
No, I had nothing to do with law enforcement, and it was pure happenstance that I ended up going to work for the FBI. It turned out most fortuitous. It was a good job, enjoyable most of the time.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
I bet you can tell something really funny that happened.
Remember anything funny ever happened on the railroad?
Well, I don't.
We all know there were, if we can remember them.
That's it. If I can just remember them. Someone said that I had a memory like an elephant. I said, well, I sure hope I didn't look like one.
not today.
But I do remember a lot of things about the company and all. And my husband retired when they closed the storeroom here, and they would have let him go on to El Reno at the same salary that he was getting here as storekeeper, but he would have had to work outside as a stockman. Mm-hmm. And he had a bad heart and an emphysema, and we knew that, and we knew that what the winters in Oklahoma were like, because we lived out there for 9 years, from 1923 to 1932. And we knew what the winters were like, and we thought, well, we can't stand those winters in El Reno.
Yes.
So, and I could have gone out there and worked in the superintendent's office, but we just decided that money wasn't everything. So he took an early retirement at 62, and I then bumped downstairs on the train master's job. And my first assistant superintendent down there was Mr. J.E. Hare, Earl Hare. Did you know him?
Yes, I did. A nice man.
Oh, he was an awfully nice fellow. And then my next assistant superintendent, Mr. W.H. Hogle, H-O-G-L-E.
Bill Hogle?
Yeah.
I knew who he was. Mm-hmm. I may have met him when I was in Dallas. He was over in Fort Worth, but his office, I think, was down in the T&P building, and he was kind of separate from everybody else, yeah, as far as I knew.
Mm-hmm. And then my next one was H.G. McDaniel.
Harold?
Yeah, Harold McDaniel.
Fine man. Spent a little time with Harold in Kansas City one time. Just a prince of a man.
Oh, he was awfully nice.
Yes.
Awfully nice. And then my last one was, before I retired from out at Biddle, was H.L. Dyer. D-Y-E-R.
Homer is a good railroader.
Yeah.
Smart man.
Yeah. I know when I worked down in the assistant superintendent's office, and the young men would come in and make application for a job, and one day, one fellow came in, and I thought, oh, gosh, he's such a young man. Going to work for the railroad company? Don't look like he's over 16 years old. And he came in, and anyway, during our conversation, I learned that he was coming as our new assistant trainmaster. Clarence Branch. Did you know him?
I know the name, C.S. Branch?
Uh-huh, yep.
Yeah, I never met the man.
Yeah, well, he went on and was at El Reno then when I retired. And I did appreciate it so much when, did you know Mr. Buffalo?
I met Mr. Buffalo, J.B.
Buffalo?
He was, yes. He was a Little Rock guy, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, uh-huh, come.
Switchman?
He was yardmaster for a long time. Well, he was a switchman before he became yardmaster. But he was over from around Carlisle or Hazen or somewhere
East
over there.
End.
Uh-huh. I think he was from Carlisle, where his home was. And Mr. Buffalo was a wonderful person. Everybody loved him.
I was around him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Quiet, well-spoken man, a gentleman.
Oh, yeah. Did you know Mr. L.B. Close? C-L-O-S-E?
Oh, no. Lord.
No. No, should I have? Did I miss something?
Oh, Lord.
I can't tell whether Helen's grinding her teeth or just laughing.
He was a master mechanic.
Does that say anything? When we were suffering our friendship?
Oh, Mr.
He just come in and say, well, it's time you go back to Memphis. We bought a little old house, our first little house out of Jacksonville. You know those, where they, during war when they were making those shells and things out there. And I worked on that house, cleaning it all up, getting it all ready, got moved in. My husband did not spend one night in that house. We had to leave and go back to Memphis. That was back and forth. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had to do that.
Did you know Mr. Gerald Everett?
Yes.
Car foreman?
I knew Mr.
Yes,
Everett.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure did.
I didn't know him well. I was around him a few times. He was a fun guy.
Yeah.
Always upbeat, very, very pleasant, liked to laugh. And apparently he'd been around the railroad for a long time.
Yeah, Gerald. Last time I heard from Gerald, he was in Houston, Texas, or San Antonio, Texas, or somewhere down in there. And then he moved up to Fort Worth or Dallas.
He's still alive, as far as you know?
He was the last that I heard of him, and that's been about 4 or 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know whether Gerald is still living or not.
What was that place we used to eat lunch, Mother, there, where Little started? Highway went across the tracks, where we ate lunch every day? Daddy and I?
Aunt Sweet Home?
Well, no, I went out that far. It was right there. Where you first crossed the tracks, just not too far from the Brown House.
Local beanery.
So, and this woman had all you could eat for lunch.
Oh, yeah. I never did eat there, but my husband did, and I know all the men did like it there very, very much, but I don't remember what it was.
Well, one of the problems was that she had a bunch of kids. Got out there one day, and the pots that she was using to cook in, she was also boiling the diapers. And you get the raisin pie, and you wanted to check it to make sure they didn't move before you ate them. A lot of the people from the roundhouse and car, they built box cars there. And also the yard office would come up there and eat.
Uh-huh.
She had always had quite a big group. I don't guess I ever got sick, but
I
think I probably wasn't the same people owned it when I went out, but now
I
had one.
Oh, I just can't think of her name right now. We had one fellow out at Haleyville, Oklahoma, when my husband was on the supply train and supply cars rather. That was from Greece. And he was always getting something from Greece and giving it to my husband. And down there at Haleyville, there were a lot of Italians there too, and they made homemade beer and homemade wine. And they were always, whenever my husband would come home, he'd always have two or three jars of wine with him. And even after we came to Little Rock, after they discontinued the supply cars, why, Tom would send us some wine and all. And
did you send us some barbecued goat one
oh,
time?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. Barbecued goat.
Did you like it?
Well, it wasn't bad. We were always wondering what Tom was going to send next. Old Tom Nick. There were some wonderful times. And they were mighty, mighty good to my husband when he was on the supply train. They called it a supply train. It wasn't a train. It was all hooked on to the local train. And it was just a group of about 7 or 8 cars that they did call the supply train.
It was sure his part of the train.
Well, it was. Yes, that's true. It was a part of the train, all right.
What about when we were in Shawnee about going to Oklahoma City for Christmas and whatever? What did you have to comment about that?
Well, when we lived out there, of course, we had passes. And the train going over to Oklahoma City had a lot, pretty good passenger service then, back in the late 20s. And we left there in 32. But they'd have parade or anything like that, you know, at Oklahoma City at Christmas time, and old Santa Claus would be out there, and the train went right through the middle of the town. And we'd get off there at the depot and check our bags and stuff and go on uptown and watch the parade and everything, and it was just wonderful. And I used to go over there shopping a lot, and then the train would come back from Oklahoma City to to Shawnee about, oh, I guess it would leave over there about 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So we had a good time of shopping over there, and it was a lot of fun to go over there and watch the parades. And our son was born out there in Shawnee, Oklahoma, 1925, and I'd take him over there and stand out there and hold him in my arms and watch the parade. And
didn't we do much the same thing when we came to Little Rock about Memphis?
Yeah, we'd go over to Memphis, but not as often as we went to Oklahoma City.
Well, no, it was farther. 135 or 140 miles,
yeah.
As opposed to 25.
132.5.
Okay.
By rail.
By rail. And 119.5 to Boonville.
Did you know anything about the lady that had a restaurant there at Boonville?
Oh, Viola. She was a black woman. Only black woman in Boonville. And all the men with the railroad company were so fond of Viola. And she would treat those men like they were her own children. And they just loved her too. My husband did. And she'd fix their lunch for them, you know, and even if they'd get in at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, she'd fix their supper for them. And everybody loved Viola.
Her restaurant was near the railroad?
Sir?
She had a restaurant near the railroad?
She had in the train station.
Oh, in the depot?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, was she had a contract to run the restaurant, or what was her, how was she in the depot?
Well, I guess she just let her have it. Because she was so good to the men, and all. I don't remember how come Viola to.
But this was while part of the depot was still being used by the agent for the railroad business.
Oh, yes.
She was in one end and
had
her restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Her home was down in Texas somewhere in Fort Worth or Dallas. Did you know Mr. Mr. Dunn from Fort Worth?
Don't think so.
Did you know Mr. Tucker? L.M. Tucker?
No.
He was a chief dispatcher there at Little Rock when I first went to work for the company. And oh, Mr. Tucker was the sweetest person. He was so good to me. And then after I moved over to the superintendent's office, he had a stroke and was in the hospital for quite a while. And I had heard that a lot of times when people had a stroke, it changed their disposition. Well, it certainly changed Mr. Tucker's. And everybody just despised him. Oh, My, I was still working in the superintendent's office, and I hated to go over to his office across the balcony. I just put it off. I just didn't want to go because he was so nasty. And they swapped him out with Mr. Dunn at Fort Worth, and Mr. Dunn then came as chief dispatcher there at Little Rock. But I was in the superintendent's office by then, so I never did work for Mr. Dunn, but I did work for Mr. Tucker. And the years that I did work for him, he was such a nice person. Did you know Mr. L.M. Long?
No.
H.M. Long. No. H.M. Long. He was a division engineer that I worked for.
When did the dispatcher's office in Little Rock, when did it go when the superintendent's office was blanked and they moved everything over to El Reno?
Uh-huh.
And when did that happen?
1965, I believe.
Okay, but I'm thinking I was in El Reno in 66 for a little while, and all of the dispatching for the south end of the railroad was over
was
there.
Was done out of El Reno. I think it was in 65.
Okay. And I think there were two chief dispatchers, Frank Bridges and Harry Rayburn.
Who?
Harry Rayburn, R-E-Y-H-L Rayburn.
Oh, yes.
And F.J. Bridges.
Well, I remember the name, I mean the names and the initials.
Uh-huh.
As I say, when I worked for, handled the efficiency test reports and personal injury reports and all, well, I learned the men's names and initials a great deal. And then I did type seniority rosters a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And would proofread them.
You had a busy time, didn't you?
Well, yes, I did, but I still loved every minute of it.
I think the superintendent's office would have been an interesting one to work in because it, just about everything that's going on in the division, one way or another, was kind of filtered through the superintendent's office. So if you worked in there, you'd know everything that's going on just like the superintendent did.
Well, especially in the transportation and communication department and clerical department. But in the car department and the mechanical department, they were out at Biddle.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't, now that's where my husband worked. His storeroom was out there at Biddle. And we think that maybe that's where one place, he did smoke, but we think that that was, the doctors did seem to think that that was one place where he contracted the emphysema.
Mm-hmm.
Was the engines would pull up there alongside the storeroom, and in the summertime just leave the windows up, and those engines would idle there. And all of that smoke and
fumes. You breathe it all day long.
I breathe it all day long. And they thought maybe that might have contributed a great deal to his emphysema.
Well, it sounds logical.
Did you know Mr. Raymond Rich?
R.R. Rich?
Uh-huh.
I knew who he was.
R.R. Rich. I expect you knew him, didn't you, Miss Bryant?
I didn't know him personally, but I knew.
Well, he and his
husband knew.
Yeah, well, he and his wife were real good friends of ours. We went to the same church together. And
well, any of y'all like call us all the
time? I'd like to use the magic.
All right. Can I get some water?
Okay.
I got
water.
Do I? I don't need anything. Mother, would you like anything?
No, thank you,
dear.
All right.
Let me go show
where it's. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Okay, we'll keep chugging while y'all are gone.
Yeah,
now we're going to tell the good stories while y'all are gone.
Well, I never dreamed that my life would end up like this.
Well,
in a nursing home.
You've lived a long, useful life, and a lot longer than most people.
Well, that's true, too.
It's life is funny, and I found out. My wife was just turned 63 when she died back in April. She was, other than having gotten cancer, was in almost perfect health and probably would have lived much longer time.
Yeah.
So you never know. It's just part of life.
Well, that's right. Well, I don't know why the Lord has left me here, but for some reason, I'm sure. But anyway, my mother and sister died at age 88 with congestive heart failure. My father was 77, and he had a heart attack one afternoon on 4 o'clock and 10:30 that night. He was gone. And my oldest half-sister up at Heber Springs gave music lessons in her home the week before Thanksgiving. And she just finished giving lessons to a little girl and went to the front door to see her off the porch and out the gate and turned around to go back into her home and fell dead in the living room. And there I am. I had rheumatic fever when I was 15 years old and they thought I was going to die. I was in a coma for 10 days and didn't know A from bullfrog. But here I am, almost 96 years old, outlived everybody in my family. I'm the only one left. My husband died at 69.
Well, like you said, the Lord's got a purpose, and an awful lot of the time we don't know what it is.
Oh, no, of course we don't.
That's what he wants, is not prepared.
I said, maybe it was leading me here to mellow me up before he did call me.
Well,
or to punish me for something that I have done or didn't do.
My wife and I, you know, before she died, we talked about this, and there's life is being a human being on this earth among all kinds of other human beings. All these relationships are so complicated, and things are going on that we around me that I'm not even aware of, and it's true of everybody. And Judy got to the point where she was ready to go. And wonder, you know, why the Lord go ahead and take her? And my thought was, well, when he gets ready, he will. And until then, obviously, he's not ready. And, you know, there's all kinds of other things that are going on around, and people are being affected by Judy, and, you know, how she was, and her relationship with me, with other people. But it's so complicated. A lot of it, you have no clue of how people are being affected just by the fact that I'm sitting here.
That's true.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer in that. I don't have a problem with it. If he wants me here, I'll keep swimming. He's ready to take me, I'm ready to go.
Well, I'm certainly ready to go, and I pray for it every day. And there are three things that I'm very firm believer in. First, prayer. Next, miracles. Next one, therapy. I've had a lot of surgery in my life. Both hips and both knees have been totally replaced. One hip had to be redone. One shoulder has had surgery on it. So I love the therapy, and I know what it will do for you.
Yes.
And I think it is absolutely wonderful.
It certainly worked to this point, I would have to say.
And it wasn't because of any one of those things that I'm here today. It's because I fell several times. And the last time I fell was back in March. And I fell in the bathroom in front of the commode and fell backwards over the bathtub. And I sat down. The bathtub had a little edge on it, a rim from head to foot, about that wide. And I fell backwards and sat down on that rim there, just full force, and fell backwards into the bathtub, and I couldn't get out. And I could hear my phone ringing, could hear the phone ringing, and I got a little talking clock, and I could hear the clock tell me what time it was. And my son called, and my granddaughter called from Portland, Oregon. Other people called and couldn't get me, so finally my son came on up there and found me flat on my back in the bathtub. So he just reached for the phone and called 911, and they picked me up, and here I am. I never dreamed that I'd ever leave my home, be picked up by a paramedic, and brought to the hospital at Benton, where my son lives, and was there for a week before I came up here.
Lord had some more plans for you.
Actually, Mother, they were firemen. The paramedics were there, but the two that took you out of the bathtub were firemen.
Oh.
The paramedics were there.
Yeah. Well,
they put you on the stretcher.
well, whoever they were, got in the bathtub with me and straddled my body and just lifted me up out of the bathtub bodily and set me out on the floor. And that's the last that I remembered at my home.
Amazing, you didn't break every bone in your body.
We never know what's going to happen to us.
That's true.
But I did enjoy my 28 years and 4 months with a railroad company.
You know, there's a lot of people would say that, but I'm afraid that some of them, you know, they're just working to the day they can retire, and they don't really enjoy themselves working for the railroad that much.
Yeah, well, I'm sure of that. Because it did pay good money.
I think a lot of people don't realize what they've got until after they're gone, and their perspective changes. Of course, not most of us, somewhat during our working lifetimes, all of us human beings are inclined to do some griping, some more than others. And I, again, haven't worked in the police business, having worked on the railroad, both groups of employees, I heard a lot of griping over a considerable number of years. Railroaders didn't gripe any more than the people in law enforcement. Every day they find something to gripe about. But at the same time, I thought in both places it was pretty good jobs. I don't know, maybe it's just a human propensity for you got to talk about something so some of it comes out in the griping.
You know, back in 1937, my husband and I went to Salt Lake City on a trip to the West. And we started into the Temple Square there. And he spoke to somebody. And I said, honey, who in the world do you know here in Salt Lake City? Well, I don't remember his name, but he's a master mechanic over the Missouri Pacific. He knew people from everywhere. And he had a lot of dealings with the people over the Missouri Pacific in exchanging materials in the store department. I don't know what his name is, but he's a master mechanic over the Missouri Pacific.
I was in service in 1944 in Spokane, Washington, and was coming home on leave before going overseas. And went down to the depot that night to get on the train, and it was so crowded. They weren't letting any more people on. And so I went up to this conductor, and I told him, you know, I'm going home on leave, and I really need to get on. And he said, well, and I said, by any chance, do you know Bernard Arbus? He said, well, yeah, I've heard of him. He said, are you his son? I said, yep. He said, well, come on, let's see if we can get you a ride. And he took me up to the engine, and it was the old steam locomotive. And I crawled up in the cab and went all the way to Lincoln, Nebraska in the cab of that engine coming home on leave because that conductor knew his ass.
Now I think back in the old days there was a lot of that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think there was a whole lot more then than there is now. Everything is so impersonal now.
One of the highlights every year, Mother mentioned the trip to Salt Lake City in 37. But one of the big highlights every year was in the late winter, we'd start planning the trip for that year. Mm-hmm. And Mother would get timetables from all over various sundry railroads. And all three of us would sit down and plan out the trip, the connection, and all this, and then Dad would show the passage. And I was thinking that I had been in 40 of the 48 by the time I was 12.
That's neat. I think that's neat for kids to get the opportunity to travel.
I think travel is an education in itself.
Yes. Yeah, you
very
see,
much so.
See different things. You know, people. People tend to be rather similar, but there are differences in different parts of the country. You know, people do things differently.
Absolutely. We had been to Mexico City. We had been to Newfoundland, in Canada, and we've been to, we never get to Seattle, but we went to Portland, San Francisco, and went to Los Angeles, and we were at San Francisco in the World's Fair out there in 1939.
And you rode trains?
Oh, yes.
Passes. At one time, we were a lot of passes on trains.
Oh, my. I never did ride on my own service. I had a pass, but it was on my husband's service because he had so much more service than I did.
Remember the old dude bush that used to come back down to the cars with apples and sandwiches and drinks and whatever. And we would go along and didn't, you know, we'd sleep in a shirt car.
Yeah.
I don't remember where it was, but I do remember one time we were going across Kansas, I think. In some way, somehow, we got promoted or whatever into the observation car for the trip on, and it was night. Do you remember that, Mother?
Yes.
How come that, did that happen?
I don't remember why it happened, but I remember that you did. I know when we went to Salt Lake City one time and were coming home, they let us ride up in the observation tower, up on top of the observation car, and they let us ride up there. Windows all the way around.
Went through the Royal Gorge on the Colorado River.
Absolutely.
Underneath the highest suspension bridge in the world at that time.
Yep.
Out in Colorado.
They've got a tourist train there now. And I don't know, a year and a half or so ago, after my wife got sick, but before she got down, we went up to Canyon City and rode that thing. It goes from Canyon City through the gorge to, they got a gravel pit west of the canyon. They pull up there and stop, and then they come back through. And it's interesting. You're riding right there alongside the river.
Yes.
In the bottom of this thing, you can look up 1,200 feet, whatever it is, straight up. And there's a bridge hanging up there.
Yes.
That was the old Denver Rio Grande Western.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know when we went to the Royal Gorge in 1937, and son loved to pick up rocks, and he picked up, we just had all kinds of rocks that he picked up down there in the Royal Gorge.
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly is a fertile place to pick up rocks, because there's nothing there but rocks.
Yeah. Went through the Moffett Tunnel.
Yeah.
Which was 7 miles long, and in the old steam locomotive, that got to be kind of whatever.
Hey, you ready to come out the other end and get a breath of fresh air?
Yeah. And you get the cinders and all.
I guess things did get a little better after the steamers were gone. They were a little bit dirty if you were outside.
Oh, I remember when they were getting ready for the diesels to come in.
Everybody get excited?
Oh my, yes. Absolutely.